Thank you, Sai Prakash, and dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say, and we are in the last week of July 2014. The week-long Guru Purnima celebrations is over, and after this, in Prashantinilam, we had a big group of devotees from the Middle East for their Pratiyatra, their Sai spiritual retreat, and they too had a week-long sadhana camp here, which ended last Sunday, that is July 20th, 2014. But before I come to the Middle East sadhana camp, I want to go back to the Guru Purnima day. Because of something beautiful that happened in the evening of that auspicious day. And that is this. So that was saxophone chakravarti, saxophone samrat, Shri Kadri Gopalnath ji, who performed on the evening of July 12th in the Sai Kulwant Hall. And we in Radio Sai had the opportunity of having him in the studio after his performance for the conversation. And I must tell you, it was such a revealing experience, an eye-opener. The world does not know who he really is, what he really is, what has made him what he is today, and how it has happened. The world does not know that once upon a time, Kadri Gopalnath ji, as a teenager, was struggling to make both ends meet, and so he worked as a salesperson in a tiny electrical shop selling wires and cables all day from 8 a.m. till 10 in the night, and then wake up at 3 in the morning and practice the saxophone. Why? Because he loved the sound. He fell in love with that melody that emerged, but not so easily. Every morning when he used to practice, people even threw stones at him, because at that time, it was not melody coming out of his saxophone. He was practicing and people were getting disturbed in the early hours of the morning. There was a kind lady who took pity on him and gave him the idea of going inside a decrepit storeroom of a temple nearby. There he said, if he produced sound, no one would get disturbed. He was so poor that he did not have money even to afford 2 meals a day. So he would go to the temple in the evening where there was fresh water. He would fill his belly with water and wake up early the next morning again to practice at 3. At one time he worked as a coolie, a daily wage laborer, all day, all through the day. One of his life-changing moments happened when he was 15. That was the time when he had heard how the saxophone sounds and he had decided that that is going to be a part of his life. And that is when he came to Puttaparthi too, 1965. He had developed so much fascination for the saxophone that he now wanted to learn, but he did not have a guru because no one ever played Carnatic music on saxophone. Difficult to find a guru who can teach him that. No one has ever tried. And he waited in Puttaparthi for 8 days for Bhagwan to call. And every day, Bhagwan somehow overlooked the father and son. On the 8th day morning, his father said, come, let's go. He's not going to call us. And just at that instant, Swami calls both of them inside the interview room. He assuages all the worries that his father had. And then he asks Kadri Gopala, what do you want? And at that time, top of his mind, there was this need to have a guru. So he says, Swami, I want a guru. I want to learn. Then Bhagwan blesses him by placing his hand on his head and says, you are soon going to be a world-class musician and you will also have no dearth for anything in life. So that is one of the life-changing moments. Yes, because after that there have been so many such amazing moments which have just zapped him, moments which have left him bewildered at the work of the power behind his wings. So all that his life has seen is this slow unfoldment of that blessing of Bhagwan. And as I told you, that is only tip of the iceberg. It was an hour-long conversation that we had with him where he shared this never before heard and never before captured tales of divine providence, anecdotes of amazing grace, instances of divine munificence. And yes, yeah, we are soon going to publish all this on our website. But I wanted to share with you because Puttaparthi is indeed the most happening place on the planet. Every day blesses you with so many such beautiful moments. Last Sunday, I had the opportunity to speak to 3 devotees from Turkey. Yes, in the Middle East group, there were many from the Islamic nation of Turkey, and I thought we should not lose this chance of listening to their stories and insights and reflections. And again, it was a very enriching experience. You are always in awe at Bhagwan's mysterious ways, the way he slides and glides into people's hearts in fascinating ways and slowly but steadily begins to shape them into his reflections. You'll hear this conversation too on Radio Sai as part of our Tryst with Divinity series sometime in the near future. But just to give you a glimpse, here's a short clip. In this I'm speaking to 2 devotees, Orchun Duan, who's a financial analyst in an internet company, and Umit Sile, who is a software architect. Both young, bright professionals from Turkey. Orchun, professionally, has it helped you coming to Bhagwan?
Yes, actually, it was my second visit to Puttaparthi. Before that, I finished my graduate school. I applied many jobs. I had many interviews. None of them worked. But even my school, the university, was one of the most prominent ones. Just its name would be enough to get in a job. Okay. But I couldn't get anywhere.
Oh.
I don't know. It was my second trip to Puttaparthi. I just got back. My friend told me that I'm working in this company and they're looking for somebody. I just remembered your name. Shall I give your CV?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, give. It's a normal company.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow they called me. They wanted to see me.
Mm-hmm.
We just made the interview. Next week I started.
Okay.
I just felt that there must be a reason for it. But after visiting Puttaparthi again, because during that time, I remember I prayed to Swami, just show me the best job that I can do. Also, I can follow your path, what you have showed to me. I do not have a job 24 hours that I could not find any moment to remember you.
Mm-hmm.
Show me a way that I can work, also be with you, also be aware of you, aware of myself and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can place Baba's picture on my next to me. He's just blessing this way.
No problem. In the company.
Nobody is in. Yes. Also, this workplace is really close to our center.
Workplace is close to your center?
Yeah, in 25 minutes I can get to there. No problem.
So you just fulfilled your wish. You wanted something where you can do your work and also do his work.
Of course, I've seen that.
Wow. Amazing. And Umit, you work as a software architect. As being a Sai devotee, helped you in any manner in your professional work, in terms of in your output or the way you look at work or your approach to work? Has it made any difference?
Well, that's a very interesting question for me, because I could say I was working at IBM as a software salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
And before meeting with Swami, I was doing a lot of sales.
Mm-hmm.
And after I met Swami, I couldn't do any sales.
Sales job is a very tricky job.
So Swami taught me that as beings here, we have no authority over our lives or what happens to us. We can do nothing really. He told me over and over, for about 1.5 years he told me that I had no power over what's going to happen.
Mm.
It is not possible for a salesman to be in the job without selling for 1.5 years. First, he made that happen for me because I was still working there.
Mm.
But no transaction happened.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying so hard. I was killing myself to do it, you know.
But no sales were happening.
Nothing was happening. And my colleagues were doing the sales. I mean, the market was fine.
Mm-hmm.
So something was wrong.
What had happened basically? Why were you not able to do the sales?
Because I think God was trying to teach me that it was not I, but it was Him doing everything.
So He was trying to tell you in through so many ways that don't ever think that if you are being successful, it is you who is successful. It is because someone else is in charge.
So I have a very thick head. It took me so long to understand that.
1.5 years.
Wow. So 1.5 years you were in the company as a salesperson and no sales.
Yeah. Then I quit my job.
Oh my God.
And I said to myself, I shouldn't be in the sales job anymore because I'm always trying to do the truth.
Yeah. If you follow truth, also it'd be a little difficult in a sales job.
And I said to myself, you like building things, you know, you like making solutions, so become a solution architect. And actually, I didn't even know what I should do.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Swami, please Swami, help. I have so many options. I cannot choose it for myself. I will try to, but please help. So he helped, really. I think he found me the right job.
Wow.
And I started there about 8-9 months ago. And now I understand that he's the doer of everything.
Mm.
So every day I start the day with making everything a sacrifice to him.
Mm.
And believing that everything which comes to us, good or bad, is the best thing that could happen at that moment.
You live in that moment. You live with that feeling.
Yes. Because, you know, even if something does not happen, it's so good.
Yes.
You have to thank for Him.
That is, anything that has happened in our life is the only way that could have happened.
Yes. So, we are constantly living in a moment of miracle.
Wow. Living in a moment of miracle all the time.
All the time. And with that perception, you become motivated. Even if everything seems mathematically wrong, it's so positive for you.
Yeah, even everything seems to be going wrong, but then that is the right thing to have happened.
Yeah, that's the right thing. I mean, I have to be here.
Yes.
So I think that's a huge change.
I think once you have that kind of perspective in life, there is no moment of sorrow, there is no moment of depression, there is no moment of real agitation, right? You just take it. Everything as His
I can't say I'm 100% like that. But,
true, but at least...
But we should live it like
we
this.
We should live in that. Yeah.
We should.
But what will be definitely true is even if you go into some sort of sometimes into depression or sometimes not happy, but you come out of it quickly.
You have a stable, courageous
yes.
life. Once you start believing in, really,
yes.
you understand what is belief,
yes.
then you can move forward.
Move forward.
You never look back.
Exactly.
You never look forward. You just try to be in the moment.
Yes. Live in the present. As Swami told, always Swami says, live in the present because the present is omnipresent. Present is omnipresent. So that was Umit Sile from Turkey, and before that you heard Orchin Duan. Both of them so happy, smiling. It is because they have found some secrets of life which can ensure that they smile always. Umit learned to let go. He learned to let go the ego, the feeling of doership, and so beautifully Swami tried to instill that in him. In fact, I remember in the studio, both of them, they had such full-hearted, satisfied smiles. And that is because they have seriously begun to let go of themselves. Let go of themselves and let him in to their lives. And this is, believe me, such a life-changing idea. Something that can alter our lives in ways we can never imagine. It can fill it with so much joy. And dear listeners, today this is what we are going to discuss. We are going to discuss about how to smile so blissfully and, more importantly, how to keep that smile going, uninterrupted, unceasing. We are going to ruminate on how to move from being good, seeing good, doing good, to being God, seeing God, and doing God. Yes, this is what we'll be discussing now on this last segment of Thursday Life from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay
tuned. So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside, and I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is almost 9 o'clock, and today we discuss be good, see good, do good, to be God, see God, do God. To frankly share with you, just 2 days ago when I paid my pranams, my salutations at the samadhi after the morning bhajans, this thought just occurred and enveloped my mind. Why be good? Why not be God? Why see good? Why not see God? Why do good? Why not do God? And this set me thinking, and I wanted to understand this more. And where do I go for answers? Where do I go for more clarity? Swami's words, as always. And this time, I felt prompted not to go to Sati Sai Speaks, but to the book of letters that Swami personally had written to students, some of which have been compiled into a book called Premadhara. These were written by Swami way back in the 70s. And since Janmashtami, the birth day of Lord Krishna, it just round the corner, which is the next major festival in Prashanti calendar, it'll arrive on August 17th. I just thought, let me pick up a letter written by Swami on Janmashtami. So I picked up this one, which Bhagwan had written on August 5th, 1974, Janmashtami. That year was on August 5th. And beautifully, just like it happens with Swami, all the time, this letter had everything that we need to know about how to make this journey from being good to being God. And tonight, This is what we are going to discuss, and joining me in this session is my colleague Harishankar, who works in the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. He's not new to Radio Sai, having joined me several times before on many such sessions. For those who are unaware, Harishankar did his MBA here in Prashant Nilayam after his engineering in IIT Chennai, and Bhagwan graciously blessed him to join the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust in 2002, where he continues to work till this day. So welcome, Hari, to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, and to this novel topic. So what comes to your mind when I say, you know, let us not be good, see good, do good, but be God, see God, do God?
Yeah, I think it's a kind of progression, and in one sense they're not separate from each other. There's a continuity as you move from be good, do good, and see good, and then you actually be God, do God, see God, because goodness is the expression of godliness.
Godliness. Wow. Yes. In fact, as I was telling now, Hari, when I picked up that letter that Bhagwan has written on Janmashtami, 1974, shall we go through that letter?
Yes, of course. Yes.
It starts with these words. Bhagwan says, accept my blessings and love. The world today is so full of people who are selfish, unloving, and unloved. This brand of atheism is almost a religion, Swami says.
Yes. And of course, you would also like to inform the listeners as to the context in which this particular letter was written.
Yes, sir.
This is a letter that was written to the students of the Brindavan campus whilst Swami was in Prashanti Nilayam.
Yes.
And more importantly, this was a message that the students received on the Janmashtami day, that is of 5th August 1974.
Yeah.
So these students, they could not make it to Prashanti Nilayam for the celebrations.
Yes.
So they were very much like the gopis and gopikas were pining for the Lord's message, and it was delivered to them on that day. And, you know, before this program started, I was listening to the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam that was going on.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the program. That segment ended actually with a discussion on Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
About, again, the Lord as Lord Krishna delivering the wisdom in such a simple and sweet manner. And that he was mentioning that in 700 shlokas, Lord Krishna, of course, expanded version, he managed to give that wisdom, distilled wisdom of the Upanishads. But again, over here, we see that in this era, and Swami, Lord Krishna, who has come again, on the Janmashtami day, he gives a message which is so succinct and yet so profound. It carries so much wisdom in it.
Yes. Which we'll know as we go along.
Yes, as
in
we
this
go
letter,
along. Yes. So,
this letter.
Yeah. And coming to those opening words itself, and as we'll see in the rest of the letter, Swami starts by speaking about atheism. And he is saying a very interesting thought. This brand of atheism is almost a religion.
Yeah.
Now to begin with, first of all, there is no condemnation of atheism over here.
Okay.
Yeah. Bhagwan is not saying that, you know, that an atheist is a sinner of any sort.
Yeah.
He's just pointing out very gently, you're missing out on something.
Yeah.
And he's hinting at that. He's saying that there are, you know, this world is so full of people who are selfish, unloving, and unloved.
And both unloving and unloved.
Unloving and unloved. He's pointing out, this is a thought that has often come to me, that their life is so dry.
Absolutely.
And this part, that it is almost a religion, it is true, because very often I have seen, you know, the people who try to tout atheism as a way of living, they are just as fanatic as anybody who would tout that, you know, religion is everything.
Yes.
You can see that fire of fanaticism is also burning in their eyes. It is like they are so convinced of their belief. And I have often actually pointed this out, that this could almost be a religion in itself.
Yeah.
Whereas if you see the people who are really at the frontiers of science, they do not share that kind of conviction. Their brain is literally open. And that is a true scientific temper, that you really never decide, you know, on one way or the other. You're always, you can have a belief As you know, Bertrand Russell once said, you know, would you be, somebody asked him, would you be ready to die for your beliefs? He said, no, they could be wrong. Right? And in that same kind of scientific temper is possessed by those who are at the frontiers of science. They won't, if you raise this, the topic of consciousness, for example, all they will say is like, we are still exploring this, we have not really reached a conclusion either way. And yet there are people who are ready to swear by this brand called atheism. And that is what Swami is, you know, gently poking.
Yes.
And
the general perception of atheism is someone who doesn't believe God, someone who doesn't go to the temple, someone who doesn't, is not a practicing Muslim, or you know, doesn't have any regard for any higher power, etc., etc.
Yes.
But Swami is not referring to that here.
Excellent. Yes.
So here Swami is telling, if you are selfish, and if there is no love in your life, you are an atheist.
And I think that becomes clear as we go to the rest of the letter.
Yeah, and so I think that is something which we have to keep in mind, because as in this letter goes, Bhagwan starts explaining what, now here he is saying, if you are selfish,
yes,
then you are an atheist. But then he goes on to explain what is a self.
Yes.
But before that, you know, the general perception of, as we think, you know, someone who goes, visits the temple and who goes to the mosque is someone who is a believer of God.
Mm.
And he is someone who is close to God and so on.
Mm.
I just before this program started, I was going through Rabindranath Tagore's Gitanjali.
Mm-hmm.
And I came through a very beautiful poem. It says, leave this chanting and singing and telling of beats. Whom do thou worship in this lonely dark corner of a temple with doors all shut?
Mm.
Open thine eyes and see. Is thy God not before thee?
Yes.
He is there where the tiller is tilling the hard ground and where the path maker is breaking stones.
Mm.
He is with them in the sun and in shower, and his garment is covered with dust.
Absolutely.
Put off thy holy mantle and even like him come down on the dusty soil.
Right.
Then he says, deliverance? Where is this deliverance to be found? Our master himself has joyfully taken upon him the bonds of creation. He is bound with us all forever. We talk about moksha. So that's what he's saying. And then finally he says, come out of thy meditations and leave aside thy flowers and incense. What harm is there if thy clothes become tattered and stained? Meet him and stand by him in toil and in sweat of thy brow.
Mm-hmm. Actually, even as you're reading this, it served as a reminder for me that, you know, when I am reading this letter, that is, if I consider myself as a religious person, let me be open to the fact that Swami is trying to point something even to the people who are religious.
Oh yeah, true, exactly.
So this serves, this letter, it can be read at so many different layers.
Yes.
So it is not just a message which is going out to people who consider themselves atheists.
Yeah.
It's also a message for people who consider themselves religious.
Yes. Yeah. I think there is so much to what is being conveyed in this poem. But as you know, let's move on.
Yeah. We've piqued the curiosity of listeners. You know.
So let's move on. Now Bhagwan, after he has mentioned that someone who is selfish is sort of an atheist, now he goes on to explain what is the self, the capital self,
mm-hmm,
with a capital S. And Swami says, it is the self that says, not I. For if it says so, then it is unreal self, since the real self has no thought of itself. The real self is the selfless self, the self that has no thought either of or for itself. Isn't that something so profound?
Yes.
Where Bhagwan is saying that the real self is the selfless self.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something which has no thought of itself.
I mean, either of or for itself.
Of or for itself.
Yeah.
It always says, not I. If If it thinks about I, then it is not the self. Okay. Then it is unreal self.
Yes.
And then in the next paragraph, Bhagavan begins by saying, it is the self that has forgotten itself because somehow it remembers itself only in others. Which means, for that to be called self, it is something which has forgotten itself because somehow it remembers itself only in others. Mm. Means it sees itself only in others.
Yes.
It exists only in others. And I think that is something very, very, really such a revealing statement.
Yes, because this is also something that many divine gurus and also the Vedas, they echo. They say that this is one aspect of divinity. Creation is an aspect of divinity. And that happens as Swami says, I separated myself from myself so that I could love myself.
Exactly.
It's such a self-referential kind of statement.
Yes.
And yet it conveys this, that the self, as Swami said, it has forgotten itself because somehow it remembers itself only in others.
Yes.
So it has to create this kind of delusion that there is something called I and there is something called not I. And it begins to enjoy that not I, that expression of itself.
Yes.
But after creating a gentle delusion that this is I and this is not I. I am a world, I am in this world of objects.
Yes. Amazing. In fact, as I read this, what comes to my mind is a very famous quote of Gandhiji, where Mahatma Gandhi said, the best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others.
Lose yourself in the service of others. Okay.
The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others.
Yes.
And that is so true.
Yes.
In fact, that reminds me of that famous song, so close to Mahatma Gandhiji, Vaishnava Janato.
Yeah.
Shall I play that?
Yes.
Vaishnava Janato Tene Kahi Ye Je Pira Para Ye Jaane Re Vaishnava Janato Tene Kahi Ye Je Pira Para Ye Jaane Re Kar Dukhe Upaka Vaishnava Janato, Vaishnava Janato, Tene Kahiye Je, Pira Parahi Jaane Re.
So if you see the meaning of this song, it's so beautiful because it says, who is a Vaishnava, means who is a man of God?
Yes.
Only that person is a man of God who knows the pain of others.
Yes.
And paradukhe upukar kare toye mana abhimanena aane re. He not only does good to others, especially those who are in misery, but he ensures that pride does not enter his mind.
Mm.
He is egoless.
Yes.
And then sakala loka man sahuni vande ninda na kare keni re. Means he is someone who tolerates and he praises the entire world, but does not say one unpleasant thing about anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And next line is, he keeps his or her words, actions and thoughts pure. And he says such a person is such a great blessing for the mother. Mm-hmm. The mother is blessed to have such a child. In fact, Hari, I'm reminded of one nice story that we published in our website some time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was about this young man who came to this town, and he told all of you ladies and gentlemen, can you see my heart, how perfect it is? He had a perfect heart. His heart looked so well shaped, glistening and untouched. And it was something which every person would want to have. It was such a beautiful heart. And so everyone were cheering him, and they said, my God, this young man is so handsome and his heart is really out of the world. It's so beautiful. And he said, can anyone challenge my heart? And there was silence and everybody was only praising him. But there was one old man in the gathering who was the only person who was not cheering him. And that old man said, young man, you may have a great heart, your heart is really very, very, very beautifully sculpted and all that, but I won't trade my heart for yours. Because my heart is actually even more beautiful. And everyone laughed. Because the old man's heart was one of the most sort of, I won't say ugly, but it was the most disfigured heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because this heart had so many holes,
mm-hmm.
and there were so many jagged pieces, and there were so many gouges, there were so many pieces which were fit, which were not actually properly falling in place with the hole. So it was a complete
mishmash.
Okay. And now the young man said, I know you are kidding. I mean, obviously your heart, man, look at your heart, there is no competition. But what are you trying to say? He said, no, really, I don't want your heart. I am very happy with my heart. The old man says, I mean, what is so special about your heart? He said, see, what I used to do is, whenever I used to see someone, whenever there was a need, you know, I used to take a piece of my heart and I used to give it to the other person. And the other person would take a piece of his heart and give it to me.
Okay.
And that is how, see, the thing is, you know, sometimes it is not tight fit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you see that, you know, there are gaps and there are these holes and all that.
Mm.
But, you know what, every time I got something new, it was like a new life into me. It was a new energy into me.
Yes.
And, you know, there are some times when I have plucked a piece of my heart and I have given it, but the other person for some reason did not do that, you know. Maybe he will do that with time. So that is the reason why there are some gouges and, you know, there were some deep pockets which are empty. But it is, it's a very beautiful heart.
And it became beautiful because he was willing to give pieces of his heart to others.
Yes. And he says that he has not experienced that much joy in life because he has experienced so much that have come into his life.
Yeah.
Because he has done that.
Yes.
Again and again. And he said, the old man, have you experienced even a tiny bit of what I have experienced?
Mm.
And now the young man was silent. Something started to work within him. That pride slowly started melting away and expressing itself in the form of tears. And then slowly, in a moment of inspiration, he just took a piece of his heart, plucked it out. And the whole audience gasped, you know, what did you do? What did you do? You have perfect heart. And he just gave it to the old man. And the old man did the same. And yes, it didn't fit perfectly, but he felt more whole, he felt more complete. And both of them, hand in hand, walked away, the crowd made the way, and such a deep lesson was taught.
Right.
I think there is so much to learn.
Yeah, because we could circle back to what we were talking about just before you played this song, which elaborated.
Yeah.
And this was this quotation by Gandhiji. And he said that the best way to find yourself is by losing yourself in the service of others. And here in that sense, like, you know, if you're willing to lose yourself in loving others.
Yes.
And that would be really the path of service, which was being advocated by
yes.
Gandhiji. And if you notice, all the sadhana, all the various spiritual practices that are advocated, they're concentrating on this aspect of losing yourself. If you lose yourself in the love of God, that is bhakti. If
yes.
you lose yourself in the service of others, that is your karma marga or the way of service.
Correct.
And the jnana marga is like losing yourself by discriminating what is not really you.
Right.
So the common denominator everywhere is this losing yourself. And what does it mean? It sounds like such a fatalistic way of being. But in reality, what we are discovering is something beyond what we take ourselves to be. So that is the invitation which Swami is giving. He is saying that perhaps, you know, when you confine yourself to atheism and you deny God, perhaps you are missing out on something. Perhaps you are just taking yourself to be just this frame in which you find yourself to be. How about looking at something
yes.
beyond? Right?
And yes. And that is... And what comes to my mind is, when we look at Bhagwan's life,
yes,
we have seen this practical demonstration of this, right?
So many ways.
So many times.
I had this privilege of once speaking to a person who had lived with Swami for several years, looking after his personal needs.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me this, Hari, sometimes, so many times in discourses, Swami keeps emphasizing, I am selfless from top to toe.
Yes.
And generally, although we accept that there is some part of our mind where we are saying that, but you know, it may not be really, you know, happening. It's too perfect. But he says, I have seen this in action. He says, for example, he gave me one very simple example. He says that once it happened that he entered Swami's bathroom and he noticed that Swami's soap had not been replaced for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, this is what used to happen with Swami, that whatever he required for himself, he would never tell anybody.
Never tell.
It was up to us to really, you know, find out. It had slipped somebody's mind to do that. And Swami had never even inquired. Like, why hasn't anybody replaced the soap in my bathroom? Another very powerful instance was narrated to me. And this person said that this was, you know, towards the closer to 2011, and Swami would have frequent episodes of breathlessness at times. So once after darshan, Swami had come back to the residence, and when he came back, he was showing some symptoms of breathlessness. So immediately this boy, this student, he kept a nebulizer so that Swami could breathe a little easier. But what happened was, even as he was placing the nebulizer on Swami's face, Swami was saying something.
Mm-hmm.
And this boy, he pleaded, Swami, don't say anything, just breathe in deeply, you'll feel better. But Swami was still talking. So he had no option but to take the nebulizer off and listen to what Swami was saying. And Swami was saying that, you know, that boy during darshan, he came and gave me a letter and he told me that his mother is suffering from illness. I have to do something for that boy. He's been with us all these years.
God.
And, you know, this story hit me very hard because I used to have asthma, which Swami cured, and that's a story for another day.
Okay.
But I know the pain that one feels, and in that period when you cannot breathe at all, the only person you're thinking of at that time is yourself. And I can really appreciate what it takes at that time to keep thinking about someone else's welfare. But that was Swami.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because a person who can come day after day, follow the same schedule of darshan, interviews, bhajan, day after day, for decades on end,
yes,
that this is a person who is giving himself to others and not thinking about himself.
Absolutely. In fact, that's what I used to feel, Hari, you know,
yeah,
when Bhagwan used to come for darshan, especially in those final 6 months, mm-hmm, 7 months, you know. Because you saw that his physical frame was definitely so much run down.
Mm.
But he was doing. And I could see that, you know, in spite of Himalayan discomfiture, he was doing it.
Yes.
He was doing it only for the sake of others.
Mm.
Because just like, you know, once we talked about that in the previous episode, we talked about that occasion when Bhagwan says that when he goes for darshan, it is not as if people are having his darshan, he is having people's darshan,
yes, yes.
Bhagwan says. Because he feels, no, I have to go because I am there for them. I have come to help them. I am here very much only for that.
Yes. And in this way, Swami is really showing us the practical way of being alive.
Yes.
You are truly alive when your life is led for others.
Absolutely.
Not so much for yourself. You know, yes, nowadays, some people who seek these adventure sports, they say that unless we are plunging at, you know, several meters per second towards the earth, we don't feel alive. But Swami is showing a very simple way. He says, like, stop thinking everything is for you, you know, me.
Yes.
That's how we lead our lives.
Yes.
And he says, just consider living your life in service of others.
Others.
And then you'll feel truly alive.
Truly alive. Absolutely. And that leading such a life, you know, that is when you actually experience the self.
Absolutely, yes.
The capital S. So let's move on with the letter.
Yes, yes.
The next Swami says is, it is the self that seeks the truth without a thought of self, because truth is selfless wisdom.
Mm.
So what is self? Self with capital S is that which seeks the truth. And what is truth? It is selfless wisdom.
Mm.
This is such a beautiful phrase, right? Selfless wisdom.
Yes.
I don't know how many educated people, how many intellectuals really practice this selfless wisdom.
Yes.
And we have seen, again, you know, I cannot but think about Bhagwan. Uh-huh. Because we have seen such a finest expressions of selfless wisdom in Bhagwan's life. And apart from this, thousands of discourses that Bhagwan has given, which is just selfless wisdom. I mean, how he was toiling to give these discourses.
Yes, for me, one of the iconic images that I have seen, actually in your Radio Sai collection of photos, is Swami standing atop the car's hood.
Car, yeah.
I was just thinking of, this is Lord who is walking on earth.
Mm.
And he did not flinch from doing such things, you know, where there was no mic. And the setting is, he's traveling from one village of Andhra Pradesh to another. This is an unscheduled stop. What had happened was there were so many devotees who were gathered there. And seeing their thirst, he wanted to slake it.
Yes.
And he has stopped there. It's an unscheduled stop. There is no mic. There is no platform that is made ready for Swami. No stage. And what Swami does is to get on top of that car's hood and deliver a message for the villagers.
Yes.
Untiring, selfless teacher.
Absolutely.
Yes.
In fact, so many such incidents come to my mind, but I think we will move on.
We have to move on.
Yeah. And the other expression of selfless wisdom I see is all these institutions that Bhagwan has set up. Because you have here knowledge which is used for absolutely selfless purposes.
Mm, mm.
That is another finest expression of that selfless wisdom. So let's move on.
Yes.
The other thing that Swami says next is, It is the self that is quiet, because quietness is the cessation of self through the wordlessness of mind. So again Swami says, what is self? Self is that cessation of self, I mean that annihilation in some sorts of self. And how that happened? It happens through the wordlessness of the mind, through the quietness of the mind. I mean, the thought that comes to me is, as Bhagavan has told many times, only in the depth of silence can the voice of God be heard.
Yes. Just to continue to the next sentence, and Swami says, it is the self in wordless meditation.
Yes.
Because wordless meditation is the stopping of the mind through the union with the divine.
Yes.
Yes. And there is a certain quality to the silence that was around Bhagavan.
Yeah.
I think for me, one of the very typical such things to mention in this context would be the silence that would be present right after Arati. That Swami would be sitting there and the Arati had concluded and there was a strange kind of silence right. That could pervade the
entire I can remember that. I mean, it was those days when Bhagavan had not left. Generally, Bhagavan would start leaving
immediately after Arati.
After the Arati. But some days he would just sit after the Arati and it is absolute silence.
Yes. Not a person, our entire gaze, you know, we would not look this way or that way because we could feel a strange quality.
Yes.
There was something that was happening. And it always used to bring to mind for me, the descriptions of the of devotees who used to sit with Lord Raman Maharishi.
Yes, absolutely. And exactly.
He would be sitting in that meditation hall, not speak a word to devotees. Sometimes even his gaze would not be upon them. He would be gazing right out of a window.
Yes.
But they, as a devotee,
just
Paul
the
Brunton,
presence.
Yeah, Paul Brunton, he writes in his book. He mentions that gradually that silence would actually penetrate into each one's being.
Yes.
Such that they would experience exactly that quality of silence which the master was feeling. And to me, it is Swami seemed to be transmitting that same kind of peace to everybody.
Yes.
That was the culmination of our bhajan session, the prayer session.
Yes.
And Swami was granting all the peace that we had prayed for in that bhajan.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think that is what always happened, because if you see the experience of devotees and someone sitting in the 100th row, someone sitting in the 200th row, at the end of the bhajan session, they are so, there would have been people who would have just cried and cried the entire session.
Mm.
Something gets unlocked inside.
Yes.
Something happens. Something that was there inside longing to find expression for years. Suddenly the dam breaks.
Eons or years? Did I hear? Eons.
Yes,
I think eons is closer to the truth, because that is one of the feelings that many people report when they look at Bhagwan. That the moment they set eyes on Bhagwan, they get that feeling that he has belonged to us for, or we have belonged to him for ages.
Ages. Amazing. And that is, so that wordlessness of the mind happens through the union with the divine.
Mm.
And I think we are that way very blessed that we got a glimpse of that, because we had the chance to be contemplative of the avatar. And then Bhagavan goes on in that letter. He says, it is the self that does not judge, does not evaluate, does not compare, does not condemn, does not separate, does not seek security of any kind.
Yes.
Does not seek even itself.
Yes.
And then he says, it is the self that has completely abolished itself, and yet in a strange and mystical fashion is never more complete, never more real, never more itself it has ever been. That is the real self.
Yes. And actually this is a continuation of what Swami was speaking about just before, where Swami was speaking of the wordless meditation.
Yeah.
Because he says wordless meditation is the stopping of the mind. And so this brings to question, actually what is it that the mind is doing that has to be stopped? And then Swami makes it clear when he says that it is a self that does not judge, that does not evaluate. And if you see that the mind is constantly doing this.
Yes.
Like say even as we are speaking at this moment, perhaps a listener is out there and he is thinking, is what they're saying, is it right? Is it wrong? These judgments, these evaluations, it is inescapable.
Yes.
And this is the mind's constant noise.
Yes.
It is doing this all the time. And Swami goes on to say, does not compare. And the mind is always at that.
Comparing, yes.
Does not condemn. That is one of the favorite activities of the mind. Does not separate. And this is the most fundamental.
Fundamental.
This is the most fundamental. This separation is actually, that is the origin. This is the alpha from which everything
correct.
You know, emanates. It does not seek security of any kind. So, when there is no separation, where is the question of fear?
Yes.
You know, and does not even seek itself. And you see this completely, it is a very powerful message for the world today. Because the plight in which we find ourselves today, the plight in which this world finds itself today, is because it is predicated on a model that says it is you or I. It is never inclusive. It's either I get it or you get it. Swami keeps emphasizing this unity where we have to move to a model of this world which says you and I.
Yes.
There is abundance for everybody. It is available to you and for me.
Yes.
And to me. You know that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This separation is an illusion that the mind creates, and the moment we do that, we fall into this plight of suffering.
In fact, how, because of the I-ness that we create, we put ourselves into delusion.
Yes.
I just reminded of one anecdote that I read in Mr. Krishna Kumar's book, who is the financial controller of the Whitefield Super Speciality Hospital. He says there was one occasion when Bhagwan had gone to the hospital to see a devotee, and when he returned, he was speaking to Mr. Krishna Kumar, and then Bhagwan was saying that this devotee was telling Bhagwan, Swami, suppose I leave, suppose I die, please look after every one of them in my family. And Swami immediately responded to him saying, who do you think is looking after them now?
No.
that is, you know, when we allow that ourselves to come in, when we allow that I, that is where, you know, this delusion happens.
Right. And to continue, this is a very mystical sounding statement in itself. And Swami says, it is a self that has completely abolished itself.
Yeah.
And yet in a strange and mystical fashion, is never more complete, never more real, never more itself than it has ever been. And to really comprehend what Swami is saying here, we have to take refuge in the opening stanzas of the Ishavasi Upanishad, where it says, Purnamadah Purnamidam.
Yes.
Purnat Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnameva
Vashishyate.
So here this stanza makes, this shloka makes it very clear that what we see as separate from us, that is still that self.
Yes,
and although it appears to us that from the whole, a part of the whole has been taken away, it has been deducted, just like we are all expressions of something that has been taken away from the whole, and yet it is that same whole.
Yes.
There is, the whole has not diminished. No, it is perfect, it is whole, and we are also expressions of that same perfect wholeness.
Yes. In fact, Bhagwan should give that example of how if you take a spoon full of water from the ocean, that spoon full of water also has the same quality.
Yes.
As the entire ocean water has.
Yes.
So that way, in that sense, it is complete.
It is complete, yet.
It is complete, yeah. Yes. So if you see, this whole letter started with Bhagwan saying that if you are selfish, you are atheist. And then Bhagwan goes on to say that, what is the real self? We talked about someone who is selfish. So what is the real self? He gave us the explanation of what is the real self.
Yeah.
And then Bhagwan is now telling us, next as we go on in this letter, how to achieve this real self. We saw what this real self is.
Yes.
You know, forgetting a real self is that which finds itself in others and etc., etc. Selfless wisdom, quietness, wordlessness of the mind and all that. Now, Swami is telling how to achieve that self. And here, Bhagwan says, You can achieve that self, with capital S, by destroying the small S, the small self. And here, Swami says, I quote again, God is love. Love is selflessness. Selflessness is the abolition of all sense of selfhood and separativeness. All thoughts of you, all identification with the isolative life of the counterfeit being called self.
Yes.
Self is separateness, separativeness. Separativeness is the denial of wholeness. Wholeness is God. The denial of God is godlessness. That is atheism. And then Bhagavan goes on to say, atheism therefore, as now understood, is not the denial of this or that religion,
yes,
or the denial of this or that concept of God. It is rather the denial of a life of love, which is the nature of God.
Yes.
It is the assertion of the life of self, which is negation of the being of God. In short, Swami says, real atheism is the denial of love and the assertion of selfishness. So clear.
Very clear. And Swami is saying a very simple thing over here, that just the last sentence, if I could repeat, real atheism is the denial of love, the assertion of selfishness. And what can be more loving way of pointing out to a person that what he's missing out really is that a life of grace.
Yes. We are missing out that.
Yes, a life of love, that a quality which only God can provide.
Yes.
As I was mentioning, you were mentioning that when people used to see Swami and tears would flow out of their eyes, because it is that recognition of a love, that of a quality which we have really never experienced,
yes,
in our everyday relationships.
Correct. Correct.
And
wow. In fact, Hari, I just reminded of one scene that Mr. B.K. Mishra, the English teacher in the higher secondary school, once shared. He said that one day he had been to the primary school, and as he was talking to one child, he saw, it was a morning time when all the children were actually playing outside. You know, they have this different... in the playground, you have, you know, they can go up and down the slide and etc., etc. There's a huge elephant, mouth of an elephant through which they come down and etc. So all the kids were having fun, and then they saw this one of the kids, little one, he was talking to someone, and suddenly he started crying. I asked, why are you crying? And then the kid said, that just a few meters away, there was this teacher who was actually reprimanding 2-3 other students. So the sir asked, why are you crying? Said, no, actually teacher is scolding them. Okay, teacher is scolding them, but why are you crying? Said, no, I'm crying because teacher is scolding them. So that was something for him to digest. Then after a while, he saw that the teacher, once one of the little ones started crying, the teacher in hell took that little one, and you know, she was holding her in her arms, trying to pacify her and etc. And now this fellow was jubilant. Why are you jubilant? He said, see, teacher is loving that little one.
Yeah.
So I'm happy. So he's telling, it was such a revelation for him, just by seeing that scene in primary school. And he says, see, love is forgetting. Forgetting that little self. Forgetting that I am this little self.
Yes, yes.
That is what is love.
Yes.
Love is for... If you can totally forget that, if you can totally sort of abolish that I am this little self,
yeah,
then that is when we truly practice love.
And also taking this in another direction, Bishu, Swami is making very clear that what is religion in itself?
Yeah.
See, religion is not really what we take religion to be, the form of rituals or etc. And Swami is saying in very simple words that religion is establishing this relationship of love with Him.
Exactly.
Do I have time to quote
a
small incident? And I am doing this without really the permission of the person who narrated this to me. I think you would have like to keep it private, but I cannot.
Okay.
And see, this was another person who had this beautiful privilege of being with Swami, serving him in Swami's residence. But this person had a very unique way of looking at things. And he was quite frank with Swami.
Mm-hmm.
He told Swami, "Swami, you have given me this privilege of serving you. However, I do not have faith in you."
Oh my God.
Yes. And imagine, you know, he had this kind of beautiful relationship with Bhagwan. And
whom he could say, actually, he could actually say this to Swami.
He said, "Yes, Swami, you have given me this task. However, I do not have faith in you." I mean, he was a person who was eternally a skeptic of anything. And he told this to Swami. And imagine Swami's response. I think it is very essential for all of us to remember this. Swami said, he asked him a very simple question. He asked him, "Do you love me?" And that was something he could not deny. He said, "Of course I love you, Swami." He said, "That is enough."
Wow.
And this particular student, he was telling me, that set the entire context for him of how he could serve Swami. Because he always used to wonder, what if I don't have enough faith? Can I serve Swami? Will he be accepting of me? But of his love, he was absolutely 100% sure.
Wow.
And because of that, Swami didn't want anything more than that. He just used to trade in, I always say this, there's only one currency that Swami used to trade in, and it is called love.
Yes. I mean,
and it is such a simple thing which all of us can understand. Faith is something very difficult. We do not know, you know.
Yes.
No, who can assert that I have got 100% faith? Okay. But love, that is our, Swami says, that is our only property that we can give away in abundance.
Wow. I think love and God, synonymous. They are synonymous.
Yes, yes. Amazing. And this love and this kind of wisdom is also synonymous.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Where love is, God is. In fact, there are so many instances, you know, where you have seen the power of love and the power of God. You know, power of love is, what is power of God?
Power of God, yes.
In fact, yeah, I mean, there are so many stories that come to your mind, but we'll move on with the letter. Next, Swami says, the process of Godward, called self-sacrifice, is in its most real essence, love. For God is love, and love alone can lead to Him, as you mentioned, you know. As the most Godful act is the act of love. So that most godless act. So what is the most godless act now? Swami says the most godless act is the act of non-love or hate. But hate, which is separativeness, can arise only when there is selfishness. Thus it comes to pass that the most godless, loveless act is the act of selfishness. Love must be completely selfless to be Godward, to be divine. Its creation must be the beloved first. Its technique must be your happiness, not mine.
Yes.
This way to happiness is the forgetting of oneself and the remembering of God.
Yes. So, once again, Bishu, I cannot help but point out that this is a wagging finger even to people who are religious.
Yes.
Because he's pointing out that you have to get to the heart of the matter.
Yes.
And the heart of the matter is simply connecting your heart with the heart of God.
Yes.
And,
absolutely.
If that is not present, no matter what kind of spiritual activity you are into,
yes,
it still, you know, shows that you are still not on the path. Just to give you a small example, some weeks ago, I met a person and he was telling me, he made two very contradictory statements one after the other. He was telling me that he was following a sadhana of spreading love to everybody around him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but still, you know, those people, they're not evolved enough to understand that I'm giving them so much love. And I could not, at that moment, I thought, you know, this something has to be mentioned to this person.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, like, don't you think there's a contradiction where you say you love everybody, and then at the same time you say that they're inferior to you? Isn't there something, you know, out of...
Which means this love also is not unconditional.
Yes, there is something expected out of that.
Expected out of that.
Some reciprocation.
Yes.
Of some kind. And I was a little curious, what is this sadhana you do? So he said that he closes his eyes and then he pictures, you know, that that a pink aura is emanating from his heart and it is... So I decided to be very straight with this person. I said that your love is reaching them only in your imagination, nowhere else. And you see, because that it is not fulfilled by a certain action. And once you have true love, there cannot be that illusion of that I am superior and he is inferior.
Exactly.
And look at that, because when you go to Swami and you ask him, Swami, who are you? Swami always makes it a point to say two things. He says first that I am God. And then he says, you too are God.
You too are God.
And he has literally democratized this divinity.
Yes.
It is available to one.
Absolutely,
and all.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so here so clearly Swami is telling, if your love has to be divine, it has to be completely selfless. And I think when once you have that kind of love, miracles happen.
Yes, yes.
Miracles happen. You know, I cannot but think about Victor Kanu, you know, the great servant of Bhagwan, who started that school in Africa. When Bhagwan, one fine day in 1988, Swami tells him, you know, I want you to go to Zambia and start the school. And he has never visited Zambia. He says, Swami, where will the money come from? And Swami says, go sell your house. And without batting an eyelid, he says, fine. And but his wife is actually thinking on her feet. And she says, Swami, if that money is not enough, what should we do? Swami says, go borrow from the bank. And that's what they do immediately. They go back to England, they sell their house, pots, pans, curtains, everything is wound up, and they go to Zambia and they start the school. And it's a long story where they take all the rejects from every school and start this beautiful mansion of love, which in a couple of years becomes the miracle school of Africa, because no one ever imagined that these students would ever, you know, can actually even pass, and now they have the top school in Zambia.
I remember, you know, once I had come for darshan. This was when I was studying in IIT. I had come during one of the semester holidays to Prashanthi Nilayam. I can never forget this scene, that there were a couple of students who were from Africa who were sitting a few rows in front of me. I had not really taken notice of them so much. But when during darshan, Swami came and stood in front of them and looked at them so lovingly. I remember everybody was suddenly curious, who are these boys? What have they done to, you know, deserve that kind of love? And later it was when I inquired, I found out that these were the students whom Mr. Victor Kanu had brought from his school,
Zambia.
The miracle school.
Wow. Yes. In fact, once when somebody, Father Charles asked Swami, Swami, please come to Africa, please come to Africa. Swami said, I'm already there.
I'm already there.
He said, I am working through Victor Kanu. That is where you become God.
Right.
You know, you become a channel of God. And in this letter, the last part, Bhagwan says, whatever we do reacts on us. If you do good, we shall have happiness. And if evil, unhappiness. Within you is the real happiness. Within you is the mighty ocean of the nectar divine. Seek it within you. Feel it. It is here, the self. It is not the body, not the mind, not the intellect, not the brain. It is not the desire or the desiring. It is not the object of desire. Above all these, you are.
Yes.
All these are simply manifestations. You appear as the smiling flower, as the twinkling star. What is there in this world? What is there in this world which can make you desire anything?
Anything, yes. In fact, since it's the Janmashtami message, and Swami, in the previous sentence, he says, this way to happiness is the forgetting of oneself and the remembering of Lord Sai Krishna.
Yes. Yeah.
And this, you know, with Lord Krishna, one of the favorite things we associate with him is the flute.
Yeah.
And Swami gives a very deep significance to the flute. He says that it is because that flute is hollow that Lord Krishna is able to bring music out of that instrument.
Yes.
His breath is able to flow through that.
Correct.
And Swami then gives the meaning of what does it mean to hollow oneself out. And when you let God do this hollowing out of you, when he takes out all that false identification, your false hates and dislikes, what you love, what you prefer and what you hate, what you dislike, when all of these are removed, that is when God's breath is actually able to flow through you.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
That, Vishu, is really that progression what you mentioned, from be good, do good, see good, and then to be God.
Yes.
Do God and see God. Because once this your doing good and all this seeing good has hollowed you out.
Yes.
What remains now is God performing his act, His mission, His intention through you.
Through you. Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
Because, see, Swami says it so beautifully, the very last sentence, yeah. What is there in this world which can make you desire anything? Which is very clear. See, that thing which desires is something that always feels incomplete. And Swami says, Purnamadah Purnamidam, you are already complete. What is it that you need? And the moment you are able to stand in that,
yes.
You are a person who can create abundance for others. You are a person who can create joy for others.
Exactly.
And that, what is it? What an expression of divinity.
Yes. Amazing. Beautiful. And to reach there, the last sentence in this letter is, you know, how to reach from that being good to being God.
Yeah.
It says, it is the pure heart that reaches the goal. Follow the heart. A pure heart seeks beyond the intellect. It gets inspired.
Absolutely.
A pure heart gets inspired. And that is what we see Bhagwan's, everything that we saw of Bhagwan was just the reflection of that purity. Yes. That is what we saw, the colossus, infinite colossus of purity, pure love. And what we saw was just the manifestation of what magic it can do.
Absolutely.
And today, you know, I would like to say that we see that even now. It happens in all of us. It happens it happens in a much greater measure. Like, for example, you know, this alumni of Bhagwan, Bhagwan's University alumnus, Gunaranjan.
Okay.
Now, he is someone who has started this non-governmental organization, which is just called UC, which is into helping weaker sections of society in various areas, and he has just built a platform to connect NGOs, so many NGOs, and trying to connect so many volunteers. He has a 40, 50, more than 200 strong, 40, 50 core team of volunteers and so many other volunteers who are all the time engaged only in doing this.
Right.
Trying to help the, and I asked once, Gunaranjan, you know, what is your inspiration? And he said, see, I studied from primary school till my post graduation in Bhagwan's University. So much was given to me, but it was given to me unconditionally.
Yes.
Like Bhagwan never told that, you know, I'm giving you free education or I'm giving you all this. Free education is only a small part. I'm giving you all this. Now, after having received all this, I want at least for 1 year you have to serve here, or for 2 years you have to go and serve in a village, or nothing.
No expectations.
No expectations. He said, with that much of pure unconditional love which I received, and what I'm trying to do is only to sort of share what I've received and live up to what I've received.
I think a person like Gunaranjan can be best described as a candle who has lit himself from the eternal flame.
Absolutely.
And actually, so many people, Bishu, you know, through you, I was able to meet these people for the Inspired Life series which we conduct on Radio Sai. It brings to mind people like Dr. Narasimhan.
Yeah.
You know, we see him in behaving in such a selfless manner, conducting the medical camps of the Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital. And I recall these words that a person said, you know, he was not a devotee, he had just merely come out of curiosity to see how the mobile hospital runs. And after he witnessed Dr. Narasimhan and spoke to him, he had a very interesting observation later for me. And he said, see, Hari, why is it that you see Dr. Narasimhan being such an inspired person out there? Is because of his very strong connection to Swami.
Yes.
He draws his entire energy, he draws his sustenance, his inspiration, everything is sourced from Swami. And he had this word, he says, in your entire organization, if any time you feel that a person is, you know, he's not able to give his best at his work, all that you have to do is restore that connection with the Lord.
Wow.
Because that is what is missing. And it is true for
all of us,
Bishu.
Yes. We have to establish that connection so strongly that we don't exist. Only He exists.
And actually in this particular letter, Swami is making it very clear that connection can only be obstructed because of the thoughts that we have.
Yes.
That one sentence,
that small
we call it seminal, that does not judge, does not evaluate, does not compare, does not condemn, does not separate, does not seek security of any kind. I think what I would do is, you know, like really print these letters out in very large, yes, and put it on my desk so that I am constantly reminded that this is how I obstruct God from flowing into my life.
Absolutely. Amazing. In fact, I'm just reminded of one more verse, very beautiful poem from Gitanjali, and probably we'll end with this because time is running out.
Yes.
Rabindranath Tagore, in this poem, he says, "Life of my life, I shall ever try to keep my body pure, knowing that thy living touch is upon all my limbs. I shall ever try to keep all untruth out of my thoughts, knowing that thou art that truth which has kindled the light of reason."
Beautiful.
"In my mind. I shall ever try to drive all evils away from my heart and keep my love in flower, knowing that thou hast thy seat in the innermost shrine of my heart."
Yes.
"And finally, and it shall be my endeavor to reveal thee in my actions, knowing that it is thy power which gives me strength to act."
I think it's a very apt poem because it's very clear. The best motivator for transformation is a desire for God's love. Yes. Nothing like that on earth.
Absolutely. Yes. And so appropriately Swami written this letter on Janmashtami, because in Janmashtami we celebrate love, because you know as the Ramavatar was so much associated with Satya and Dharma, you know, we associate so much prema and shanti with the Krishna avatar, and Swami took that opportunity to tell boys what is love.
The boys of Vrindavan.
Yeah, who are waiting for him. What is love and how through this love they can actually reach God, because God is ultimately love. Amazing. Thank you so much, Hari. And it really makes me feel that we should take each of these letters that Bhagavan has written and, you know, dwell on them, because there is so much that Swami conveyed, and, you know, all these, they are not there in Satya Sai Speaks, but there are such profound messages. In one letter, Swami has given almost one Upanishad.
Yes, yes.
And everything is there that we want to know about self, about God, about love, and how to reach Him.
It was a really beautiful experience, Bishu, and I must thank you for this opportunity.
Well, let's thank Swami for enabling us to be here and discuss this on this beautiful Thursday. So let's pray to Bhagwan that He gives us more opportunities to soak ourselves in this Premadhara, this stream of beautiful letters that Bhagwan has written to His boys and through His boys to the entire humanity. Thank you so much, Hari.
Thank you.
So dear listeners, so that was an episode of Outside Inside, Deep Inside, and it's time to wind up because the time is running out. It is almost 10 o'clock. And as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama entitled Satya Kathalu, which was presented by the Sai Youth from Tamil Nadu on 15 November 2009. So as always, please keep writing to us. Tell us what you feel about this program. listener@radiosai.org. That's our email ID. And if you have any queries or comments or any suggestions, please feel free to put them down. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much for tuning in all through the day on this lovely Thursday, and we look forward to meeting you again, continuing this live session next Thursday. Thank you so much, and a sweet goodbye and loving sign-off from Prashant Nandar.